Welcome into the hockey booth. The past week in the NHL has been, well, absolutely buzzing.
Oh, for sure.
And we're not just talking about the usual midseason action. We are seeing some major pressure points boiling over.
Yeah, you can really feel the tension cranking up, especially from the front offices.
Exactly. We've got GMs publicly calling out their own teams, surprising surges, and some, frankly, explosive financial news that we have to get into.
It's that time of year, right? That post-Thanksgiving stretch where, you know, you can't hide anymore. The results are what they are.
That's right. And our job today is to really cut through all that noise. We're going to filter through the most critical stuff from, you know, prospect breakouts to huge injuries and this really unbelievable story about how much these teams are now worth.
And that context is key because when a guy like Barry Trotz says what he said, or a team suddenly puts veterans on the trade block, those aren't accidents. Those are signals.
Calculated moves.
Exactly. And we're going to break down what those signals really mean for the players, the coaches, and really the whole direction of the league.
Right. Let's start with maybe the loudest signal of the week.
Hmm.
That's coming from Nashville with general manager Barry Trotz. He's furious.
Furious is the right word. I mean, this is not your standard GM disappointment. This is public rage, which you just don't see very often.
Especially from him.
Especially from Trotz. The quote that was everywhere was, "I need expletive more from them. I need more."
I mean, when you say that to the media, you are sending a shockwave right through that locker room.
You're questioning everything. Effort, execution, all of it.
All of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the numbers completely back him up, even if the outburst is a little jarring.
Yeah, let's look at the record. As of the 23rd, they're 6-11-4. That's eighth in the Central. That's not where they want to be.
No. And the real anchor dragging them down is the scoring, or I guess the lack of it. They have 49 goals.
League worst. Dead last in the entire NHL, averaging just, 2.29 goals a game. It's anemic. And Trotz himself just sounds bewildered by it.
Well, you look at the roster he built, and you can see why. This team should be scoring.
Absolutely. Think about the investments they made. They went out and got proven veterans. Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault. They brought in Brady Skjei. These are guys with track records.
Top-tier talent.
Right. And you add them to Philip Forsberg, that group should be putting up numbers. But Forsberg is leading the team with just 8 goals.
Wow.
Yeah. And only 3 guys on the whole team have 5 or more. It's why their goal differential is minus 24, worst in the league.
So the obvious question then becomes, what about the coach? What about Andrew Brunette?
And that's the most fascinating part of this whole situation. Trotz drew a line in the sand. Well, he is staunchly defending his coach.
He's basically saying this is not on him.
He's saying it's the opposite. He talked about that whole idea of firing a coach to get a temporary bump. He thinks that's the wrong move.
Yeah, get your way out.
Exactly. He thinks it lets the players completely off the hook. He even brought up that 2018-19 Blues team that fired their coach and then won the cup.
Right, the classic example.
And Trotz's take is that in those situations, the players always say, oh, we underperformed, the coach was great, now we have to be better. He sees that as a total cop-out.
So in his mind, it's not the system, it's the execution.
100%. He's saying, when you're a multi-million dollar player and you pass the puck right to the other team, that's not on the coach. That's on you.
You can just hear the coach in him coming out, even though he's the GM now.
Oh, absolutely. He can't turn it off. He's giving these really specific on-ice critiques. Sure. He told the media the team needs to, quote, get greasier sometimes.
Shuckles, get greasier. I love that.
It's such old school hockey talk, right? But it means something very specific. He's telling them to stop being a perimeter team.
Get to the net.
Get to the net. Go to the dirty areas. He's tired of watching them rely on skill and rush chances that aren't working. He wants net front presence, ugly goals. He specifically called out Marchessault and Stamkos.
But there's a risk here, right? I mean, he's defending Brunette so fiercely. What happens if the team keeps losing?
That's the tightrope he's walking. He did admit that, you know, the roster construction is partly on him, but he's so publicly backing the coach that if this doesn't turn around, so they go, I don't know, 4-10 in their next 14 games.
Then what?
Then all eyes are on Trotz. He's taken away the usual scapegoat, the coach. He called it a partnership of accountability. Well, if the players don't respond, that partnership is broken and he's left holding the bag. The players might even start to resent him for it.
Okay, let's shift from one pressure cooker to another. A huge market hitting the panic button, the New York Rangers.
Yeah, they just came through a crisis week, a really, really ugly stretch for them.
A 4-game losing streak in regulation is bad enough, but losing to the Utah Mammoth, who are on their own losing streak, that's a different level of bad.
That's a five-alarm fire. And it wasn't just that they lost, it was how they lost. The offensive well was just completely dry.
And the shot differential was, I mean, it was shocking.
It was staggering. Over those four losses, they got outshot 137-79. That is just, you're getting dominated. You're getting hemmed in your own zone shift after shift. And during that time, they were 30th in the league in scoring.
And a huge part of that is, of course, the injuries. They just got hit right where it hurts the most.
Right down the middle. I mean, losing your captain, JT Miller, with an upper body injury, that's a massive blow. And he was already playing hurt.
Right. He had that lower body thing he was gutting out.
Exactly. And then you add Vincent Trocheck to the mix, who's already missed 14 games this season. Losing your top two centers is just catastrophic for any team.
It just exposes the depth or lack thereof.
Totally. It forces everyone into a role they're not ready for. Suddenly, Mika Zibanejad, who's been struggling himself, is trying to carry that top line with guys like Will Kyle and a really underperforming Lafreniere.
And then the second line center becomes
Juuso Pursainen, who is a winger. They're forcing him into the middle out of sheer desperation. And that just shows you the flaw in the roster construction. When the big guns are out, the drop-off is a cliff.
This brings us to some of the player criticism we saw. The term flubbers was thrown around. Can you bring that down?
Yeah, flubbers is just some insider shorthand for, you know, guys who aren't living up to their draft hype, high picks who just haven't figured it out yet.
So, Alexis Lafreniere.
He's the poster child for it right now. He's had a really rough stretch. But it's not just him. Zibanejad's plus minus has just cratered. And then you hear that phrase, not Will Kyle.
What does that mean?
It's a kind of a subtle dig. It's basically saying Will Kyle is out there working his tail off every night, giving you consistent effort, and the rest of the depth guys aren't. They're not stepping up.
So with the team sitting at 10-11-2, you have to think the heat is turning up on the GM, Chris Drury.
Oh, the whispers are getting louder, for sure. This roster was built to win now. You've got big contracts, big expectations. A record like that is just not acceptable.
Which made that 3-2 win against the Blues just absolutely critical.
It was a massive exhale for the entire organization. Mm-hmm. They desperately needed to stop the bleeding.
And it was the way they won that felt so important. 3 5-on-5 goals.
Which is an insane stat when you hear it, but that was only the third time all season they've scored more than 1 5-on-5 goal in a home game.
Wow. In 10 home games.
Yeah. That tells you everything. They've been living off the power play, off transition. That's not a sustainable way to win hockey games.
And Coach Sullivan was all over that after the game.
He was. He immediately started talking about defense creating offense, about not playing a high-risk, reckless game. He's trying to drill it into their heads that they can't cheat for offense to get out of this slump.
Discipline. Structure.
Exactly. That's the only way they're going to survive without their top centers and, you know, maybe quiet down some of those rumors about Drury's job security.
Let's head west now, because there's a team facing an even bigger organizational crisis. That's the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, this situation has gone from bad to, well, to a full-blown reckoning. They are signaling that they are open for business.
And not just for tinkering around the edges. This sounds big.
This is a fire sale. They're sitting at 9-12-2, 30th overall in the league. And the killer stat for them is goals against. They've allowed 86 goals.
League worst. Again.
By a wide margin. The team defense is just fundamentally broken. And now we're getting confirmations from insiders that the team is actively making veteran players available.
That's the white flag.
That is the official raising of the white flag on this version of the Canucks. They're pivoting to a youth movement.
So who are we talking about here? Who's on the block?
Well, it's a mix of pending free agents and guys with some term left. You've got Evander Kane, but his contract comes with a 16-team approved trade list.
Which always complicates things.
Always. Then there's Teddy Bluger, who has a 12-team no trade. After that, you've got guys like Kiefer Sherwood, David Kampf, Derek Forbort. They're all on the table.
The difference being Kane is a big contract you'd have to retain salary on, whereas the others are more like depth pieces for contenders.
Exactly right. They're easier fits. But the big name, the elephant in the room, is Elias Pettersson.
Logically, it makes sense. If you're rebuilding, shedding an $11.6 million cap hit would certainly speed things up.
It would, but he's supposed to be your cornerstone. So that brings us to the real flashpoint here, and that is the captain, Quinn Hughes.
Who is basically their entire offense right now. He's the only guy on the team scoring over a point a game. 21 points in 18 games.
He's been phenomenal. And trading him would be, I mean, it would be a complete teardown. The message to the fan base would be devastating.
So what are they saying publicly?
publicly, the message is trading Hughes is not our priority right now. They're trying to calm things down. They're saying Honeck isn't expected to be moved either. That's the outside message.
But the inside rumor is different.
The inside rumor is way more aggressive. The belief within parts of the organization is that it might be better to move him this season if they don't think he's going to commit long term.
Okay, but let's push back on that logic for a second. He's your best player. He's cost controlled. He's young. Isn't trading him now, when the team is at rock bottom, the definition of selling low?
That is the exact debate that is probably tearing that front office apart right now.
Yeah.
You're selling low on the team's value for sure.
Yep.
But you could argue you're selling high on his individual value.
How so?
Because the return would have to be absolutely massive. A king's ransom. You're talking about a package that has to start with, I'd say, two blue chip prospects, a future number one center, and a top pairing defenseman, plus at least two future first-round picks.
But how many teams can even put that kind of package together?
Not many. Maybe four or five, realistically. And they are already circling.
So I'm sure they are. Who are the big names?
Well, the market is salivating. The New Jersey Devils are the obvious one because of the brothers, Jack and Luke. That's a huge pull.
The Hughes connection.
Of course. But you also have teams like the Carolina Hurricanes, who desperately need that kind of offensive defenseman. The Detroit Red Wings need a cornerstone for their rebuild. Even the Chicago Blackhawks, who need elite talent to grow with their young guys.
And his cap hit is actually pretty reasonable for what he is.
It's a bargain. $7.85 million for a Norris-caliber defenseman. That's what makes him so attractive. This whole situation.
Yeah.
It is easily the most important trade storyline to watch in the entire league right now.
All right, let's pivot from all that off-ice drama and get to the action. We saw some incredible individual performances this week, especially from the goaltenders.
Yeah, we have to start in Minnesota. What Jesper Wallstedt is doing is just...
it's historic.
He's been unbelievable. He blanked the Jets 3-0.
Stuffed all 32 shots, and that was his third shutout of the season already.
In how many starts?
In just 8 starts. It's just absurd. His record on the season is 6-0-2.
Wow.
And if you just look at November, he's 5-0 with a .970 save percentage and a .99 goals against. He is playing like a 10-year veteran, not a rookie.
A brick wall. As his teammate Brock Faber said, yeah, he's been a wall. This run he's on is completely changing the conversation about what the Wild can be this season.
And that win over the Jets was a tough one for Winnipeg. It spoiled Mark Scheifele's 900th career game.
It did. And to make things worse for them, they lost defenseman Neil Pionk to an injury in the first period. Their decor is already so thin.
Yeah, Coach Arneil said they've been hammered by injuries.
And this just underscores their biggest problem, which is inconsistency. Dylan DeMello even said it publicly that they aren't even close to where they need to be.
Let's move over to the Atlantic, where a future Hall of Famer hit a big milestone.
Andre Vasilevsky. He and the Lightning shut out the Flyers 3-0. That was his 41st career shutout.
And he seems to own the Flyers.
It was his 6th career shutout against Philly alone. But what's really amazing about Tampa is how they just keep winning, no matter who is out of the lineup. They were playing without Braden Point in that one.
And yet their other superstar just takes over.
Nikita Kucherov. He had just come back from an injury himself. And what does he do? He assists on all 3 goals.
Unbelievable.
Well, he's just on another planet. Cirelli had a goal and an assist too. The Lightning have now won 12 of their last 15 games. They are just a machine.
We had one more shutout to talk about, this one in Colorado, and the only goal came off a pretty rare mistake.
Yeah, Scott Wedgwood got his first shutout of the season for the Avs, and it was a tight 1-0 game. The goal came late in the second, and it was all because of a puck handling error by the Chicago goalie, Spencer Knight.
And the Avalanche just pounce on those mistakes.
Instantly. Cale Makar jumped on a long rebound and buried it for the game winner.
And that second period was just, total domination by Colorado.
Overwhelming is the only word for it. They outshot Chicago 19-1 in the second period. 19-1.
That's incredible.
And that's who the Avalanche are this year. They are so detailed. They lead the league in scoring, but they also give up the fewest goals. This 1-0 win, based on defense and capitalizing on one mistake, that is a perfect picture of a championship contender.
Let's turn our attention now to a team that was really in the wilderness a few weeks ago, but is suddenly red hot. The Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, the Sabres are on a tear. They've won 4 of their last 5 games. They've climbed all the way back to point 500 at 994.
They're out of the cellar in the east.
They are. And it's interesting, this surge really came after they made that move to put Alexander Georgiev on waivers. It kind of cleared the air in the crease and simplified things.
And their big signature win came against a real heavyweight, the Carolina Hurricanes.
A huge 4-1 victory. And it was a win that really showed how the team is buying into what Coach Lindy Ruff is selling.
Structure.
Structure and physicality. They actually out-hit Carolina, which is not easy to do. They blocked 21 shots. Ruff has been preaching tighter defense and quick transitions, and you're finally seeing it pay off.
And that game also gave us a goal that we're going to be seeing on highlight reels for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Beck Malinstein's goal was a thing of beauty. It was his second in four games, and it was just dazzling.
He completely undressed Sebastian Aho.
A perfect toe drag deke. Aho's playing defense there, and he just walks around him and beats Anderson. It immediately brought back memories of that famous Jason Pominville goal from 2006.
And the goaltending in Buffalo is still kind of a fascinating puzzle, isn't it?
It's a really unusual situation, but hey, it's working. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen was great against Carolina, made 28 saves. He's finally looking healthy and focused.
Hey, who's the number one?
Well, that's the thing. They don't really have one. Right now, Luukkonen, Alex Lyon, and Colton Ellis all have exactly 3 wins each.
That's wild.
It is. But Luukkonen had the right attitude. He basically said, I'm not going to question it. As long as we're winning, I'll be ready when they call my name.
And a big part of this winning streak has to be getting some key guys back from injury.
Oh, it's been huge. Getting Jason Zucker and Zach Benson back in the lineup has made a massive difference. Kurt Ruff said it just makes them a little deeper on lines.
It takes the pressure off the top guys.
Totally. It allows him to spread the offense around. The other team can't just key in on Tage Thompson's line anymore.
All right, let's talk special teams, because we saw 2 really different power play stories this week, one in L.A. and one in Washington.
The L.A. Kings got a classic Kings win, a 2-1 grinder over the Senators. It was all about their defensive identity.
Darcy Kuemper was solid.
Very solid. Their penalty kill was strong. And they won the game because they capitalized on their one big power play chance. Brant Clark scored the game winner.
His first power play goal of the year.
Yep. A one-timer that deflected in. And that win continued a pretty crazy streak for the Kings.
Right. They have a 12-game point streak against Ottawa now.
It's their longest active streak against any team. They just own the Senators. And you have to give a shout-out to Joel Edmondson, who had 2 assists in that game. He's been a really steady presence for them.
Now let's go to the Capitals, who are in a full-blown power play crisis.
Oh, it was a fiasco. It's costing them games. After one loss to Tampa, it was described as not even close to good enough. The pressure was really mounting.
And then, against Columbus, they finally broke through.
In a big way. A 5-1 blowout win. And defenseman Jakob Chychrun got the monkey off their back. He scored their first home power play goal since way back on November 5th.
And Chychrun himself is on fire.
Red hot. That goal extended his point streak to 8 games. He's got 5 goals and 6 assists in that stretch. He is driving that power play right now.
Before we move on, we have to touch on this just incredible human interest story from that Capitals team.
This is one of those stories that just puts everything in perspective.
It really does.
Yeah.
Dylan Strome.
Yeah. So during the first intermission of their game against Montreal, Dylan Strome finds out that his wife, Taylor, has just given birth to their 3rd daughter.
In the middle of the first period.
Right around 7:30 p.m. He's out there taking a shift, and his wife is in labor. He called her a warrior.
You can't even imagine what was going through his head.
He was pretty emotional talking about it afterwards. He said hockey was not on his mind at all during that first period, that he just felt helpless. He said it was something he'll never experience again. Just a wonderful story, a great way to welcome their daughter, Stutton Kimberly.
Absolutely. And that's actually a pretty good, if maybe a little jarring, transition to the tough realities of the injury report, because the last week brought some really devastating news for a few big contenders.
Yeah, these aren't just minor bumps and bruises. These are injuries that could really alter a team's season. Starting in Boston.
Charlie McAvoy.
Their number one defenseman. He took a slap shot to the face, needed surgery, and he's on injured reserve now.
So what's the timeline? And what does that do to their blue line?
The good news is he is expected back, they're hping, before the Olympics in February. But in the short term, this is a huge hole. It forces everybody else to play up a pairing. Hampus Lindholm's minutes are going to skyrocket, and it completely changes how their power play operates.
Then in Winnipeg, an already shaky situation in net just got a whole lot worse.
The loss of Connor Hellebuyck is just catastrophic for them. He's out 4 to 6 weeks after having knee surgery.
And he was the guy holding it all together back there.
He was the glue. The Jets already give up a ton of high-danger chances. They're in the top 10 for shots allowed. Hellebuyck's elite play was masking a lot of those defensive problems.
So now it's up to Eric Comrie
and Thomas Milik, the World Juniors hero. They have to carry the load now. And if that team defense doesn't get way better and fast, they are going to slide down the standings in a hurry.
And the Islanders got hit with a double whammy, too.
Yeah, right when they were playing well, winning 7 of 9. They lost defenseman Alexander Romanov for probably the rest of the season. He needs shoulder surgery.
That's a big loss. He was logging almost 20 minutes a night.
A key part of their depth. And then they also lost veteran forward J.G. Pageau, who's week to week. The depth on that team is going to be severely tested.
Okay, let's switch gears and talk about the future. And we have to start on Long Island with this teenage phenom, Matthew Schaefer.
What this kid is doing is just incredible. The number one overall pick, 18 years old, and coach Patrick Roy is just leaning on him.
The minutes he's playing are insane for a rookie.
They're insane for anyone. He played over 27 minutes on back-to-back nights. 27.29 against the Blues, 27.23 against the Kraken.
And that puts him in some pretty elite company, historically.
You have to go all the way back to 2003 and Jay Baumeister to find a player that young logging that many minutes on consecutive days.
So what is Roy seeing in him that gives him that much confidence?
He just raves about Schaefer. Not yet. He said Schaefer was in on the rush all the time, creating offense, but also defending smart.
The underlying numbers back that up, right?
Oh, yeah. Even when he's not getting points, the puck is going in the right direction. In that Blues game, when Schaefer was on the ice at 5-on-5, the Islanders outshot them 19-6. He's the real deal.
Now, over in Tampa, they're dealing with their own defensive injuries, and it's leading to a pretty interesting experiment.
Yeah, this is a cool story. With Eric Cernak out week to week, they recalled Max Groshev. He's a 2020 third rounder.
And he's got a unique backstory.
He does. He was a forward, but he recently converted to defense after getting a suspension late last season.
So what's the plan with him?
Well, he's described as a really fast, exceptional skater, and there's talk they might use him in what's called a roving 117 deployment.
Okay, break that down for us. What does that actually look like?
So normally a team dresses 12 forwards and 6 defensemen. In a 117, you dress an extra defenseman. But that 7th D-man, in this case Groshev, could be used almost like a hybrid player.
So he'd play both positions?
Kind of. Because of his speed and his forward instincts, they could use him to jump into the rush from the back end or even take a shift as a winger if they need a spark. It's a very modern, strategic way to use a player's unique skills.
Very interesting. Meanwhile, in Pittsburgh, they're shaking things up by calling up a top prospect from the AHL.
Tristan Bruce. He's a second-round pick from 2021, and he has been lighting it up for Wilkes-Barre Scranton. He's leading the team with 8 goals and 13 points.
So where does he slot in with the Penguins?
That's the big question. He's mostly played center in the AHL, but the Penguins are pretty set down the middle, so we'll see if he starts on the wing. It's also worth noting that they sent defenseman Harrison Brunicki down at the AHL on a conditioning loan.
Which usually means one thing.
Yep. It's widely believed that's just to get him some games before he heads off to play for Team Canada at the World Juniors.
Let's dip into the junior hockey world now, because there was a huge trade in the OHL involving a top Flyers prospect.
Jet Luchanko. He's the Flyers' first-round pick from this year, and he was just acquired by the Brantford Bulldogs from the Gulf Storm.
And this was a big haul.
A very big haul. Brantford sent forward Lane Gallacher and 4 draft picks to Gulf for him. And Luchanko is a stud. He's an exceptional playmaker. Already has 17 points in 11 games. He's even played 8 games with the Flyers already.
So what's the logic here for both teams?
Well, for Gulf, it's all about the long-term plan. They're rebuilding, and they're set to host the Memorial Cup in 2027. They see Lane Gallacher as a future cornerstone for that specific team.
And for Luchanko and the Flyers.
It's a huge win for his development. He goes from a rebuilding team to a contender in Brantford. He'll get a deep playoff run, and he gets to play for coach Jay McKee, who was a former teammate of the Flyers GM Danny Briere. It's the perfect situation for him.
And we had another story from the amateur ranks that just went absolutely viral.
This is just the best story. Blackhawks prospect Mason West. He's a projected first rounder for 2025.
And he delayed his hockey career for football.
For one last season as the quarterback for his high school team, Edina High. And the payoff was a storybook ending. He led them to the Minnesota state title.
A 42-35 thriller.
And he didn't just play, she starred. He threw for over 2,300 yards and had 34 total touchdowns.
And this story really resonated beyond just the hockey world.
Oh, it exploded. Former NFL players were sharing it as this perfect example of why kids shouldn't specialize in one sport too early. It's about being an athlete. Now he's heading to the USHL and then Michigan State, but he got to have that one last memory with his childhood friends. Just a fantastic story.
It really is. Okay, let's wrap up this section with a quick look at the Flyers' AHL affiliate, the Lehigh Valley Phantoms.
And they are a fascinating case study right now. They've been playing really well, 7 wins in their last 10 games.
And their power play is elite.
League leading, clicking at 21.2%. That's a huge weapon for them.
But there's a paradox here.
A big one. Because as good as their power play is, their penalty kill is just as bad. It's sitting at 75.7%, which is 4th worst in the entire league.
That's a huge gap.
It's a massive gap.
Yep.
So the fact that they're still winning tells you that their 5-on-5 play and their goaltending must be absolutely stellar. But that PK weakness, that's something they have to fix if they want to be a true contender.
All right. It's time to shift our focus now from the on-ice battles to the truly mind-boggling financial realities of the NHL. The business of hockey is just exploding.
The numbers in the latest reports are just staggering. They really changed the entire financial landscape of the sport.
So what's the big headline number?
The average NHL team is now worth $2.2 billion.
Billion? With a B.
With a B. That's a 15% increase in just 1 year. Average revenue is up 9%, and their operating profit, their EBITDA, is up 20% to $54 million per team.
Okay, let's pause on that term, EBITDA. For folks who aren't in finance, what does that really mean in simple terms?
So EBITDA is basically a team's pure profit from its operations. It's the money they make from tickets, TV deals, merchandise, before you factor in things like interest payments on debt or taxes.
So it's the truest measure of the health of the business itself.
Exactly. And the fact that it jumped 20% shows that the core business model of the NHL is incredibly strong right now.
And what's the main driver behind all this growth? It feels like it has to be the media deals.
It is almost entirely the media rights deals. The league just signed a new 12-year Canadian TV deal with Rogers that's worth almost $7.8 billion U.S. dollars.
That's incredible.
It's more than double the old deal. And the expectation is that the next U.S. TV deal is going to nearly double as well when it's up for renewal.
And the important thing about that national TV money is that it's shared equally.
That's the key. Every one of the 32 teams gets an equal slice. And what that does is it disproportionately helps the small revenue teams. Their values went up by 19% this year compared to 14% for the big revenue teams. It helps keep the whole league competitive.
But the big dogs are still the big dogs. Let's run through the top 5 most valuable franchises.
Number 1, no surprise, is the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're valued at $4.3 billion.
And that's all driven by their massive local revenue.
It is. $130 million just from gate revenue. Their local TV deal is worth about $45 million a year, and that's expected to jump to $55 million soon. They are a financial juggernaut.
And number 2 is the New York Rangers.
Valued at $3.8 billion. And for them, it's all about the building. They had the highest gate receipts in the league last year, $179 million. Madison Square Garden is a cash machine.
Then number 3, the Montreal Canadiens.
Sitting at $3.4 billion. And they are about to get a massive boost. They just signed a new local media deal with Bell that's going to pay them between $70 and $75 million a year.
That's a new league record for a local deal.
By a lot. That is a huge competitive advantage.
And breaking into that top 5, passing the Bruins, are the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, they jumped up to $3.1 billion, and that's a Connor McDavid effect.
2 straight trips to the final doesn't hurt.
Not at all. And they have a new local TV deal that's projected to pay them over $50 million a year. Having the best player in the world is very, very good for business.
So we mentioned the smaller markets getting a big boost. Which teams saw the biggest percentage jump in their value year over year?
This really shows you where the market sees growth potential. The Carolina Hurricanes saw a massive 53% increase in their value, up to $2 billion. The Columbus Blue Jackets were up 40%. And both the Utah Mammoth and the Winnipeg Jets were up 33%. It shows a ton of confidence in those markets.
And these valuations aren't just based on what's happening now. They're looking to the future.
That's a critical point. Future arena projects are already baked into these numbers. So the Calgary Flames and the Washington Capitals, who both have new buildings on the horizon, have seen their values adjusted upwards to reflect that future revenue.
We have covered a ton of ground today, from the high-stakes drama in the GM's office all the way to the incredible financial power of this league.
And I think the common thread through all of it is that the cost of failure has never been higher.
That's a great way to put it.
You know, Barry Trotz is betting his reputation that player accountability is the answer in Nashville. And in a market like Vancouver, where every team is now worth billions, the debate over trading a guy like Quinn Hughes is just incredibly high stakes.
And all of this is happening against the backdrop of a league that is just flush with cash. That $2.2 billion average valuation is just a game changer.
It is, and it's all driven by those media rights deals, which brings us back to what we saw with the Montreal Canadiens.
Right. Their new local deal, $70 to $75 million a year, it just completely changes their financial footing.
It really does.
And that leads to a final thought for you, the listener, to chew on. Considering the huge shift in power that comes from these massive local media deals, which team that's currently lagging in local revenue, you know, a team like the Anaheim Ducks or the Winnipeg Jets, maybe even Columbus, which one of them stands to gain the most power in the next 5 years if they can land a Montreal-sized local contract? Who could become the NHL's next financial giant and completely shift the balance of power in the league?
That's the billion-dollar question, isn't it? That potential for movement is what keeps it all so interesting.
We appreciate you joining us here on the Hockey Boot.
We'll see you next time.